From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. The 2024 election is now in our rearview mirror. In addition to former President Donald Trump returning to the White House, the Republicans have held on to their razor-thin majority in the House of Representatives, and after a four-year hiatus, the party has reclaimed a Senate majority. In addition, the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee conducted a confirmation hearing on three of the four Biden-nominated members of the Postal Board of Governors. Former Labor Secretary Martin Walsh decided to remove his name from consideration on the eve of the hearing. This leaves former Representative Val Demings, former Postal Board of Governor William Zolars, and former Director of the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, Gordon Hartogenesis, eligible for Senate confirmation. More about these issues on a future Naps Chat. In addition, the current Board of Governors elected Amber McReynolds as its new chair, succeeding Ramon Martinez, and Derek Kahn was elected vice chair. Now that we got the politics out of the way, let's talk business. On this Naps Chat episode, we will once again be focusing on one of the most important decisions active and retired postal employees make each year. That is the choice of which health insurance plan in which to enroll. As the postal community knows well, this year is like no other in memory. The postal community will be participating in a segregated postal health plan within the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program. About a month ago, we were joined on Naps Chat by Carla Kirby of the Postal Service, who spoke about the new plan. On this episode of Naps Chat, we're being joined by an FEHP veteran of our podcast. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome back to Naps Chat for the sixth year in a row, the Office of Personnel Management's Jay Fritz. It's an annual Naps tradition for Jay to visit with us at the start of the annual open season. Jay is OPM's Manager for Outreach and Program Services, which means he's in charge of FEHBP open season. Jay began at OPM in 1991 and has been engaged in the FEHBP ever since. That's more than three decades during which Jay has negotiated FEHBP contracts with insurers and worked with enrollees, agencies, and FEHB participating plans. Welcome back to Naps Chat, Jay.
Good morning, Bob. Glad to be back. And I'm not sure about that three decades. That's not real. I think you caught away. I want to look at it. But my entire career at OPM.
Right.
In the same office still, which is, I think, it's kind of unusual.
That's the reason you're a veteran.
Yeah. It's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. Jay, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, 2025, which begins on January 1st, the Postal Service Health Benefits Plan will be operating as a component of the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program. From the 2024 open season perspective, for postal employees and retirees, how will this open season be different than previous ones?
Yeah, I think it's a good way to sum it up. The big difference is going to be the implementation of the Postal Service Health Benefits Program. But from an open season perspective and from OPM's perspective, it's still open season. Now, with the PSHB, everyone will be auto-enrolled into a plan. I'm sure Carla discussed that when she was on, but it's still open season. You still have the opportunity to examine the plan to be auto-enrolled into, and also the plans that, you know, those that do not have plans continuing, their current FHB plans not continuing into PSHB, they're going to be placed in the lowest cost nationwide plan, which is going to be a real big change from them because it's going to be, could be substantially different than what their current FHB plan is. So again, it's open season. OPM puts the information out there. That's your opportunity to review your plan that you're going to be placed in for 2025. And take a look at the premiums, take a look at the brochures, the benefits, and decide if the plan you're being auto-enrolled into really is the best plan for you and your family.
So I would just say this, that more than any year in the past, postal participants in this new plan really need to look at the brochures carefully because the plans could have changed, particularly if they're auto-enrolled or if their plan no longer participates in the Postal Service Health Benefits Program.
Correct. We always encourage everyone during open season to take a look at how their plan is going to change for 2025. And as we pointed out, it could be substantial changes for postal employees. And again, primarily those that their current FHB plans do not transition to PSHB. So it definitely could be a difference in premiums. It definitely could be a difference in benefits. It can also be different in how the plan operates. If someone's enrolled currently in an HMO and the plan that will be transitioned to the lowest cost nationwide plan is Blue Cross and Blue Shield Blue Focus. So it's really, you know, it could be a substantial change, not just in plans, premiums, how their plan operates. So it's really something you need to look at and consider.
Most of the plans that have not transitioned over to PSHB, are those HMOs?
I believe all of the fee-for-service plans will offer, that the current FHB fee-for-service plans will offer a PSHB plan. But a lot of these are the HMOs, generally the smaller HMOs that didn't really have enough postal employees and annuitants enrolled to justify joining the new program.
Let's talk about the key dates in the 2024 open season. What are those key dates?
So open season began back on November the 11th, and it will run through December the 9th. So they're basically the key dates. By the end of the day on Monday, December the 9th, that's when open season closes. So you still have some time left. So, you know, I'm sure the 9th will be here sooner than anyone really anticipates it being.
Within the context of this open season and potentially future open seasons with regard to the Postal Service Health Benefits Program, can you talk about how the Office of Personnel Management is administering it and how its responsibilities are distinct from those from the Postal Service?
Sure. So the PSHB program is within the FHB program. And what that means is that the program itself for PSHB, like FEHB, will continue to be administered by the Office of Personnel Management. That means the contracts between the PSHB insurance carriers are with OPM. OPM will continue to lead the benefit and rate negotiations. OPM will issue a call letter that we do every year, our call for benefits for PSHB carriers. So really, OPM administers PSHB the same as it does FEHB. And even the enrollment system is also handled by the Office of Personnel Management. Now, of course, it's in concert with the Postal Service, our partners there. But, you know, again, it kind of emphasizes it's within, PSHB is within FEHB. So OPM will continue traditional roles in administering the program and the enrollment process.
Yeah, Jay, in conversations, many of the PSHBP participants I've been speaking with are curious about the premium differences between similar PSHBP plans and FEHBP plans. For example, NALC or APW or mail handlers in FEHBP versus Postal Service Health Benefits Plan. And most importantly, Blue Cross Blue Shield, in, you know, between the two programs. Could you talk about these premium differences?
Sure. So the first thing you need to remember is that FEHB and PSHB rates are based on the cost of the benefits provided and therefore dependent upon the cost and utilization of the people enrolled in the plan option. So for some options where PSHB rates are higher, and I believe there's a few of those, the plan option has a relatively small percentage of annuitants when compared to other plan options and therefore does not benefit as much from the Medicare requirements in the PSHB. So, you know, kind of we talk about the cost of benefits and get a little bit more detail on that. The largest contributor to the 2025 premium increase was the increase in what's called trend, which is basically the change in costs. Obviously, costs are going up everywhere and utilization of services from one year to the next. And just a couple of things the carriers noted, impact of price increases by providers and suppliers, increased utilization, cost of prescription drugs are increasing, and particularly specialty medications such as those GLP-1s, which are used for weight loss and diabetes management. So, you know, all of these things have upwards pressure on premiums. And one of the ideas behind the PSHB was that it increased Medicare utilization, and that would offset some of the premium increases. So as long as there's an overall increase in the overall cost of benefits, everyone's going to see a premium increase, but hopefully some of it was offset by, for PSHB, for postal, by that increased Medicare utilization.
Yeah, and we're seeing that, and I'm just going to observe this, that the average premium increase under FEHBP was 13.5% for 2025 as compared to 11.1% in the Postal Services Health Benefits Plan. And you've explained that the reason for the differential is probably Medicare integration. Would that be the prevailing reason for the price differential?
Correct, because the benefits for PSHB for 2025 were to be similar to the FHB benefits for 2025. So, and again, you have these underlying cost pressures. So a lot of the offset was, in fact, due to the Medicare integration.
We're looking at double-digit increases in both programs, though, and that's substantial. I think that's the most we've had since a highest rate increase since probably around 2015. I'm curious, how does this compare with premiums for large private sector employers and other public employee health plans?
So we at OPM, we do benchmark against comparative large employers. One of our benchmarks is CalPERS, and that's the system for California state employees and retirees. And they're the largest purchaser of public employee health benefits in California, and which makes them the second largest public purchaser in the nation after us, OPM, the federal government. CalPERS is looking at their increases for 2025. They're looking at 10.79%, which I believe looks like a little bit less than ours, but everyone's getting hit by these premium increases. The other one we look at, we benchmark, is the Business Group on Health, and they announced the results of their large employer health strategy survey. They surveyed 125 large employers covering 17.1 million lives. They're projecting an 8% increase for 2025. And we also look at PricewaterhouseCoopers. They're projecting 8% medical cost trend in 2025 for both individual and group markets. So unfortunately, everyone's being hit on it. So yeah, it's higher than what OPM would like. And you know, I'm an FHB enrollee myself, so I'm not really happy with this either, but it is what it is. So we try our best to negotiate down the rates, but there's only so much you can do when there's these underlying premium increase factors that we discuss.
Yeah, the data that you're just sharing me in the benchmarking, what I notice is that FEHBP is pretty close to or below CalPERS, or it has been recently between CalPERS and the private sector health plans. This year it's higher. Is there anything unique about FEHBP that would drive the premium increases a point or two above what everyone else is?
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's anything really unique. I've not compared the benefit packages between CalPERS and FEHB. It could be certain things that has been decided that OPM would like to have covered that perhaps some of these other groups don't. So it's really kind of hard to do a comparison without seeing exactly what benefit these increases for CalPERS and the others are based upon.
I'm just curious if between Kaiser North and Kaiser South in California, which has a substantial healthcare footprint, if that has anything to do with the lesser of an increase in California.
It might. We know that Northern California is a higher expense area than Southern California is. I think we see that every year, and we also see the plans between Northern and Southern California sometimes adjusting their service areas to potentially have a lower premium impact. But it could be for California. You know, all these things factor in. You know, costs are higher in certain areas. You know, I would imagine costs are higher in the D.C. area than they are in, you know, some rural parts of the country, too. So, you know, all that factors into the overall premium for the FEHB plans.
Jay, the overwhelming majority of Postal Service Health Benefits Program participants, as well as FEHB participants, I guess almost around two-thirds of them, participate in Blue Cross Blue Shield government-wide or postal-wide plans. How will they fare if they stick with the Blues this year?
So the first thing to keep in mind, Bob, there are no bad plans in the FEHB or PSHB program. So, you know, if they're currently in Blue Cross and Blue Shield, Blue Cross and Blue Shield does offer an equivalent PSHB plan, but we always recommend that people review their rates and changes in the brochure. So, you know, each year we have change, and we have a section of the brochure that addresses those changes. So, you know, it's not, there's no, again, no bad plans, but the question is, which is the better plan for the employer annuitant and their family members. And, you know, we always, you know, and this back before there was a PSHB, we always encouraged the people to check their plan brochures just to make sure that they understand what benefits are changing and that they're okay with those. And if they're not okay, to make a change. And the same with premiums. If you're okay if your premium increases, then you can maintain your plan. But if you're not okay, you know, it goes back to the purpose of open season. This is your opportunity to do that analysis, do that evaluation, and decide which plan you want to be in. And again, we give you the opportunity to change. The changes that under Blue Cross and Blue Shield or Blue Cross and Blue Shield's premiums are not to your satisfaction, you have the opportunity. And we encourage people to take advantage of that opportunity to change.
But it's not only premiums. I mean, people shop premiums, and that's the nature of the beast. But you have to look at whether or not there's deductible, what the magnitude of the deductible is, and where's the stop loss or the catastrophic protection that you might have in a respective plan also. So just don't look. The premium is not the end. It's only the beginning of your investigation. Is that accurate?
That is completely accurate. And I kind of use my own personal, you know, I'm in Blue Cross and Blue Shield Basic, and I was taking a look at the brochure, the change page, and I'm starting to think I may have to do a little bit more research. I've been enrolled in Blues. My three decades have been enrolled in Blues. But, you know, I need to take a look at this and see exactly what's changing because, you know, again, with those three decades includes getting older and my medical needs, my wife's medical needs change. So Blue Cross and Blue Shield, you know, take a look. Maybe not best option. Maybe Blue Focus is no longer, I'm sorry, Basic is no longer the best option. Maybe Blue Cross and Blue Shield is not the best option. But we give everyone the opportunity.
And one of the most, meaningful changes that could occur in one's life, besides just getting older, is Medicare eligibility. Because once you become Medicare eligible, you have to take another look carefully at the respective plans. Can you talk about how a Medicare beneficiary or in the Postal Service, future retirees are going to be required on, with certain exceptions, to enroll in Medicare? Is there anything specifically you need to look at plans if you are participating in Medicare in contrast to a postal employee?
Correct. As you point out, one of the big changes for PSHB is a requirement for Medicare. We put a lot of the information in the brochure, as you point out. We also put information on our website. So we created our PSHB landing page that we created probably about a year or so ago to provide information on those changes that are coming and just information about PSHB in general. So we encourage everyone to go there. We do put information on there regarding pharmacy benefits, regarding Medicare, and, you know, we encourage everyone to go there. And the website is opm.gov/PSHB. So we encourage everyone to take a look there. We put a lot of information there, and we put a lot of time in putting that page together. So we encourage everyone to take a look. This is a big change. It's a big change for PSHB, from FEHB, and OPM has done, you know, a lot of work to help people understand the transition. So we do have our page as information on Medicare Part B, information on pharmacy benefits. It talks about the auto enrollment that I believe you talked about with Carla, and also some of the cost savings of Medicare Part B or Medicare Advantage. So we definitely encourage everyone, every postal employee, to take a look at that, but especially those that are in the Medicare eligibility, and make sure that you're doing what's best for you and your family.
Let's stick with Medicare for a bit. One of the issues that we talk about, and there is a bit of confusion, is the Medicare Part D, or what's called Employee Group Waiver Program, which has implications for postal retirees and participating in Medicare. Can you shed any light on that?
I'm not that well versed in Medicare AGWIP. It is complicated. I'm trying to learn it myself, but again, it goes back to the resources that OPM makes available. So again, you know, everyone in the situation trying to get a better understanding of these AGWIPs really needs to take a look at our PSHB landing page. And that's, again, opm.gov/PSHB.
And there's explanations in each of the plan brochures about how that interact, and the interaction between Medicare prescription drug coverage and the Postal Service Health Benefits Program plan, correct?
Correct. So definitely correct.
So you need to you need to look at the brochures.
Correct. We encourage everyone always to look at the brochures regarding benefits and premiums. And you're right. There's a lot of information in the brochures regarding these Medicare AGWIs because they are so confusing. And, you know, we keep saying the brochure is the official statement of benefits. That's what's been negotiated between OPM and the FEHB or PSHB carriers. So, again, that's the official statement of benefits. That is how that plan's going to provide, administer the AGWIP. So that's definitely the place to go. We provide some other general information, as I pointed out, in the web pages, but the brochure is a definitive voice of how that's going to be administered.
Another issue about Medicare is that Medicare-eligible Postal Service Health Benefits Program participants are eligible to apply for premium rebates through the Postal Service Health Benefits Program. Where should they find out if their plan actually offers those premium rebates?
So in the past, the FHB program, several have had these premium rebates. I'm assuming they're carried over to PSHB. But again, Bob, it's the brochure. The premium rebates will be spelled out in the brochure. So, you know, we kind of keep saying go back to the brochure, but there's lots of information in there. And again, that's what's negotiated. So any type of premium rebate for Medicare Part B, it's going to be specified in the brochure. So we really can't encourage enough. I know the brochures are long. I know they're dense, but there's a reason for that. And the reason is that this is how the plan operates. And that's where the information is.
Is there the brochure. There's still comparison tools on the website where you can compare different plans, correct?
Correct. There's still the FHB plan comparison tool. There's also a plan comparison tool, and I believe it's on the PSHBS, and that's the Postal Service Health Benefits Enrollment System is where you can get to the plan comparison tool. And, you know, I'm kind of thinking, want to point out is that, you know, talking about open season, OPM still has its open season page, opm.gov/open season. On that page is we created a section for PSHBS to assist our postal employees and annuitants in navigating through PSHBS. And it includes a link to the overview, which gives general information on PSHBS. That's where you can find the PSHB brochures. You can find the premiums. And it also has a link to the PSHB system, and that's the enrollment system that's going to be used for our postal employees and annuitants. So, you know, back to open season, you know, administering open season, which we've done for a long time, is that the information's available. So really encourage everyone to start on our open season homepage, opm.gov/open season. And again, there will be a tab that will go for PSHB and those postal employees and annuitants rolling to PSHB. The information's there, and the plan comparison tool is actually on the PSHB enrollment system website. But again, you can link to that enrollment system from OPM's open season page.
And that might be a good start if you're considering, or as you should consider, options within the Postal Service Health Benefits Program. And then once you identify of the compare plans, which you are inclined to investigate more deeply, then go to the brochures. So you're not overwhelmed. Would that be a good strategy?
That's a really good strategy because, you know, we have a lot of nationwide plans. You know, we mentioned Blue Cross and Blue Shield. There's also GEHA, and then we have the postal employee plans. So there's a lot to consider for people that are, you know, this year kind of making this change, especially those ones that, you know, are going to be defaulted into that lowest cost nationwide plan. So, you know, the plan comparison tool is a good place to start. You know your zip code. It brings up the plans available to you, helps narrow it down. You also have the HMOs that are out there too. So it would help, you know, kind of narrow down the plans. We have links to the brochures. Once you get an idea of which plans you're generally interested in, then you go do the in-depth research and see, again, you know, whether it's, you know, the benefits, the premiums, how it's integrating with Medicare, Part B, premium reimbursements, all those things are in the brochure. Once you kind of get, you know, start drilling down to the specific ones you're interested in.
One aspect of open season that is not changing, it is common to both postal employees and federal employees and annuitants, is the dental and vision coverage that is available through the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program portal. Can you talk about if there's anything new about these aspects of health coverage?
Sure. And one thing we and you hit upon it is that, you know, there's a lot of changes proposed to employees this year with PSHBS, but they're still eligible for FedDev, you know, our dental vision. If they're enrolled in FedDev dental vision, their enrollments are going to continue. They don't have to do anything with FedDev unless you want, you know, look at plans, possibility of change of plans. And, you know, the FedDev program continues to operate. And what we're focusing on is cost transparency for dental enrollees for 2025 plan year, while minimizing increases in dental and vision premiums. For the first time during open season, there would be a compared dental service cost tool would be available. And the tool increases cost transparency and to be available as part of the decision support tool suite on benefits.gov. And one thing I kind of highlight, we have changed the web address Benefeds. It used to be benefeds.com. It's now benefeds.gov. If you continue to go to benefeds.com, you will be rolled over to benefeds.gov, but just kind of pointing out on our materials. So what you can do on this tool, if you're considering a specific dental procedure for yourself or your family, such as orthodontia, implants, restoration, you can compare your estimated out-of-pocket costs for that procedure across all 12 of the our FedVip dental carriers. So that's a nice addition that we have. The tool includes...
That is a wonderful option, because I recently had a dental implant and I had absolutely no clue what I would pay for it. So I was in for a rude awakening.
I'm with you on that, because I've had a couple crowns over the last year or two, and you're right, no idea. I had no idea what it was going to cost until it was actually done, and then I found out. But, you know, this identifies about 75 of the most common dental services, and it enables our enrollees to make informed decisions when choosing their insurance carrier, and not just to carry the plan option, whether you want standard, high, basic, et cetera. So we also asked our FedVip dental carriers to remove some restrictions on reconstructive treatments, such as partial dentures, bridges, implants. We had two of our carriers remove that restriction, so now 10 out of our 12 dental carriers do not have a treatment restriction. 8 out of 12 carriers have enhanced their dental options by adding dental treatment codes, and one carrier's added additional cleaning per year, totals 3 cleanings per year. Mm-hmm. For vision, it doesn't look there's been many benefit changes for vision. Just our premium increase for vision is about 2.97%. 2.97% for dental plans, and vision increase was only 0.87%. So, you know, we're doing a good job of holding down the premium increases for dental and vision. But, you know, always looking to improve the programs and make them better, more useful for our enrollees. So,
sort of a last question, Jay. I know that a lot of postal employees have been using the flexible spending account option in the past. As they migrate over to the Postal Service Health Benefits Program, there is a new contractor, I understand, that's going to do FSAs for postal employees. Can you shed any light on that?
Bob, you know as much as I do.
Okay.
We have been informed that the Postal Service is leaving FSA feds. If you notice, I didn't mention anything about FSA feds during our question and answer here. That's all that I know, unfortunately. It was OPM found out a month or so ago, that Postal was leaving. So we really have no information on that.
But Postal employees are going to have an FSA option under Postal Service Health Benefits Program, as provided through the contract with the Postal Service Health Benefits Program. So people shouldn't be worried about losing that benefit.
Our understanding is they will be eligible for 2025 under the new vendor. Again, that honestly, Bob, that's all we know about it. We were informed by Postal that they're leaving FSA feds, and, you know, we removed FSA feds from any of our materials regarding Postal employees. Yeah, that's honestly all we know.
Okay, well, you know, Jay, I want to thank you once again for joining us in this week's NAPS chat. This is Jay Fritz from the Office of Personnel Management. Thanks, Jay.
Anytime, Bob.
Our folks ought to familiarize themselves with the many options available at the website that promotes the Postal Service Health Benefits Plan and act upon it. And I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave us a positive review in the podcast store of your choice. And more importantly, share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
myself right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm gonna